All right, we'll call the meeting January the 6th, 2002 of Post Council into session. We have some new members and some who've been reappointed.
Director? Okay, so there's been a couple of positions that have been, actually one that have been vacant for quite some time. But Melina Stevens,
yeah,
from Summit County Council, right?
Yeah.
Has been appointed by Governor Cox to sit on this council, so we welcome her.
Thank you.
Sheriff Jared Rigby, is he here today?
Not yet.
Okay. He's going to be representing a county of less than 100,000. And then Sheriff Kelly Sparks from Davis County. There he is. Nice to meet you, sir. And then Dr. Molly Swain from Weber State representing academia. Thank you. And then reappointments, Chief Alan Swenson from Layton PD, and then Chief Chad Soap from Woods Cross PD has been reappointed by Governor Cox. So,
okay.
I think I...
Come on. All right. And as you can see, Wade Carpenter is not here. He's on an airplane on his way to Phoenix, so I'm sitting in his stead, and we'll see if we can stumble through this. All right. We've got two sets of minutes that we need to approve, September 30, 2021, and a virtual meeting on November the 4th, 2021. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second. From Chief Swanson. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? That passes. All right, next we have quarterly reports from Lieutenant Moore and Lieutenant Newland.
So for the quarter of September 1st to November 30th, 2021, post investigations received 70 complaints. We opened 39 cases. We conducted one ALJ hearing. We closed four cases with no action, and we received seven relinquishments. One was for a BCI violation. Second was for falsification of a government record and forgery. The third was for voyeurism. The fourth was lying under Garrity, dishonest in violation of a department policy, intoxication, and threats of violence. The fifth was for sexual conduct on duty and lying under Garrity. The sixth was for possession of a controlled substance, and the seventh was criminal mischief, domestic violence, and threats of violence. We reviewed 166 basic training applications, 26 dispatcher applications, and 35 waiver and reactivation applications. We currently have 75 open investigations, and 64 of those are active. Do you have any questions about that? Thanks.
Morning, everyone. Basic Training Bureau in the quarter September 1, 2021 to November 30, 2021. We finished a number of different classes. 358 LEO finished, 359 SFO and LEO finished, 360 SFO and LEO finished, and we finished 361 SFO. For 358, we had 27 cadets with 27 completing. The one that departed was cadet decision. 359 SFO had 13 enrolled, 12 completed, and one departed for a cadet decision. 359 LEO started with 26, had 24 completed, had two departed. One was an agency decision, and one was a certification exam, so an academic departure. 360 SFO started with 35 cadets, 35 graduated. Two were departed. One was a completed waiver process elsewhere, and one was a cadet decision. 360 LEO finished on December 16th, started with 43 cadets, 35 completed. We're actually waiting on seven for that, so that number is actually a little bit misleading because of some COVID issues. We had one departed for an agency decision, but we expect the others to make up the rest of their coursework there. 361 SFO complete on December 17th. They had 24 cadets, 17 completed, again, several incomplete for either injuries or illness. And we just started 361 LEO on Monday with 40 enrolled in that. In-service training, we had 46 courses offered among a number of different disciplines and a total of 765 students total. Graduation rates for SFO are, if you include the ones that we expect to complete, 97% and 87.5% currently. For LEO, that's we expect around 95% graduation rates. Questions on any of that? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Lieutenant. 2021-2022 quarterly third curriculum update. Marcus Yockey. Mr. Yockey. Oh, there he is.
So just a quick note, these are up on the screens are the courses that we have updated to the new research-based curriculum approach that we're heading towards. That these are the courses that were already approved by the council over the last few sessions. So we updated a few of our ethical courses just to the research-based approach. So ethical standing, decision-making, we combined. Emotional intelligence and professionalism, we updated. We had an antiquated approach, and I think we've moved in a good direction on that course. We added the fingerprinting course with BCI to allow for better fingerprints for criminal history. Laws of reasonable force, we updated to the research-based curriculum approach. Our conflict management, and then we added the human trafficking. So again, these have already been approved. This is just the update for the new year that we have started teaching our cadets. That was for SFO. In our LEO, we updated the community-oriented policing. We added the autism course as we requested by the council. And then these are the 16 hours that were approved by the council for the additional defensive tactics courses. So these are what we ended on: prevention of in custody death, standing restraint, and search review, defensive mobility and striking with natural weapons, takedowns 2 and 3, ground tactics 3, fire stations drilling, close quarters and varying environment, and then overcoming positions of disadvantage. And then another thing that we did was we moved interacting with civilian canines. We moved it from SFO to LEO because it was a better approach to have it in the law enforcement block instead of the SFO block, because law enforcement officers are more likely to encounter citizen dogs instead of SFO. Just for numbers really quick, we have hours-wise, as far as what we've updated to the new research-based curriculum approach, 28 of our 326 LEO hours, which is 8.5%, and then for SFO, 30 of our 205, which is 14.6%, so 58 out of 531 for a total of 10% that we've updated to the new approach that we're heading towards of providing the satellites with enough information so that they can teach the same way that we're teaching, and so that all cadets are getting the same objectives and same curriculum. So that's the update on that. I will move on to the next item, which is duty to intervene. So Director Stevenson would like to move this forward. We have a new course that we prepared, duty to intervene course. It's a 2-hour course, so we would like to request an additional 2 hours to be added to the SFO block by approval of the council. This course will go over the legal duty of an officer to intervene with other officers and ensure that their constitutional rights are being upheld and that unreasonable use of force is not being applied to individuals, and that they are actually following their legal duty required by the courts.
And just so this body knows, there is a potential bill regarding duty to intervene by Senator Iwamoto. So I'd rather be preemptive, and we've been researching this course. Actually, kind of eye-opening, some of the legal requirements of an officer to intervene. So that's what the whole objective is in this basic course, is to teach them ground up what their duties are and responsibilities.
And just for clarification, if approved by this body, we would implement this immediately, and I believe 362 for SFO as a pilot program for POST, and then we would push it out to the satellite academies beginning in July.
And how does this compare with the proposed legislation of Senator Iwamoto?
It just complements it, so it just provides the instruction as far as the legal instruction. There has been some discussion as far as which way Senator Iwamoto's bill is going, and this will just complement it. So,
okay. In her bill, the proposed bill, there is no requirement for training.
Right.
It's just to outline what is expected of an officer in the field. And still we're in negotiation phase. Colonel and a couple others in this room that are involved.
So I would need a motion so that we could add the additional 2 hours to the SFO block.
Do I hear a motion?
A motion. Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No opposed. It passes.
Thank you so very much. I will turn the time over to Lieutenant Newland to discuss the remainder of the scenario update.
This should be very brief. We just wanted to give this body an update on our scenario efforts to bring those up to speed. We have decided to make almost a bridge course with our defensive tactics program and our scenario program. We found a gap in training between the static defensive tactics program within the mat and the gym facility and the scenarios that the cadets were being exposed to. So we anticipate part of our scenario program moving to a reality-based defensive tactics that will allow them to the cadets to utilize defensive tactics in a more realistic environment. That would also allow us to shift our traditional scenarios to focus more on de-escalation, conversation, and criminal investigation. So that is our intent moving forward. We have started incorporating that. We have also added a scenario for autism specifically in our mental health and mental health crisis scenario-based training. And we have, with the last class, implemented a new evaluation method for scenarios wherein the scenario evaluators have an electronic method whereby they're grading the cadets on how they're performing on those scenarios. Any questions or? Yes, sir.
Can you speak to what that debrief will look like? There are certain key points we're going to hit on every scenario when we debrief a scenario.
Yes. So the cadets will be graded on, I think, five different areas, and I don't have that in front of me, unfortunately. So it'll be the criminal investigation, use of force, search and seizure, de-escalation, and victim-based policing.
And tactical retreat.
And tactical retreat, excuse me, yes. So we are incorporating all those, and again, I don't have them in front of me, so I apologize. But the five basic areas that the cadets will be graded on and given a pass or fail, and then remediation if they're not.
So how this will look and play out, at the end of every scenario, there's a debrief by a seasoned veteran officer. And they will go through this list of questioning. Should you have retreated? Could you have safely retreated? To get the officer and recruit to start thinking in those regards as they interact with the public. But again, officer safety will not be compromised. We want them thinking about, okay, can I put something, an object between us to create that time distance scenario? So.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we will move on to disciplinary cases. We have a new Assistant Attorney General with us, Andrew Hale. And the first case is Tyler Albrecht. Is Mr. Albrecht or his counsel present?
It appears not.
All right.
Okay. Yes, good morning, Vice Chairman and members of the council. Just a brief introduction. As Mr. Austin indicated, I've recently taken over from Renee Spooner as counsel for Post. Very recently, in fact, and I look forward to working with you and getting acquainted to those of you that I don't know. I understand from some of my colleagues, or had understood, that we had a relatively light schedule this morning. There's been some cases added this week. It doesn't seem terribly light to me, but it's my first time. So we'll forge ahead with the matter of Tyler Albrecht. Mr. Albrecht was formerly employed with the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. He was terminated in November of 2020. The allegations that against Mr. Albrecht that were sustained by Post include a DUI, impaired driving, and carrying a dangerous weapon while under the influence of alcohol. Mr. Albrecht waived his right to an ALJ hearing and admitted as true all of the allegations in the notice of claim, or the notice of agency action, I'm sorry, that you have in front of you. In this case, Post is recommending a 2-year suspension That is an upward deviation from the baseline recommendation of a one-year suspension, and the reason for that is that there are three aggravating circumstances post-determined. The first is that there were multiple charges involved, and the second is that the DUI involved a crash, and the third aggravating circumstance is that at the time of his arrest, Mr. Albright, his BAC was two times the legal limit. A brief summary of the facts of the case are as follows. Mr. Albright was investigated by a local agency for DUI, crashing his vehicle, and carrying a dangerous weapon while under the influence of alcohol. Mr. Albright had been drinking, decided to kill himself. While driving, he crashed his vehicle. After the crash, he wanted to shoot himself with a handgun that he kept in his vehicle. Upon arrest, a blood sample was obtained, which showed a blood alcohol concentration of 0.14. Mr. Albright entered a guilty plea to be held in abeyance to an amended charge of impaired driving and to carrying a dangerous weapon while under the influence of alcohol. He participated in Garrity interviews with both his agency and Post. During those interviews, he confirmed that he had consumed alcoholic beverages before driving his vehicle and was involved in a crash. He said that he decided to shoot himself after the crash, so he removed a handgun that he kept in the glove box, but a friend who had arrived on scene apparently intervened and took the weapon from him. Again, he waived his right to a hearing, and the recommendation is a two-year suspension.
Questions for Mr. Hale? Harry.
I have a question. Just, given that there's a mental health aspect of this, was there a reason that there was not a Category G proposed?
Fitness for duty? Yes. Mm-hmm. My question as well.
Let me defer to Sergeant Hamlin on that matter, if I may.
I had a bunch of these, so I'm trying to keep this one straight. I can't remember if he had received counseling after, because this is this, if you'll notice in the date, that's been a little bit, but I believe he had been receiving counseling before, so we didn't take it into account. The reason was that it was a one-time event. It was just something bad that happened in his life that night, so we didn't look into that category on that event.
Any other questions?
I was going to say, I think you guys can apply it if you wish to, though, so he just has, because then that would just require a fitness for duty if the council deems that it would be something good to apply on that.
Yeah, we've had discussions about these types of situations, and unless there's a fit for duty evaluation and it's determined by a doctor to be unfit, we can't reach Category G. We can't.
I suppose that you guys
this body can. So to clarify, prior to.
Actually, prior to.
And he's not here.
He is not.
Any other questions?
Hearing none, we have a motion.
Move the accept recommendation.
Second. All those in favor, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, it passes.
Can we put the name for the record, the motion?
We need to call out the motion.
Rapid response. Rapid to the motion.
And Dr. Check it.
Okay.
Dr. Check it.
That's all right.
All right. Moving on.
The second matter is Jared Barney. Do we know if Mr. Barney or his counsel is present?
I'm not here.
Mr. Barney, you want to go up front? Do you have counsel with you, sir?
No,
Mr. Hale?
Mr. Barney was formerly an officer with Provo Police Department. He resigned in April of 2021. The sustained allegation against him is a charge of official misconduct. Mr. Barney defaulted, meaning that he did not respond to Post's notice of agency action. And in this matter, Post is recommending a one-year suspension, which is the baseline recommendation under the guidelines.
The facts are fairly brief and as follows. Mr. Barney was investigated by his agency for policy violations. Mr. Barney was found to have represented himself as a law enforcement officer while on duty in order to access video footage from a business for a personal matter. The footage was only provided to Barney because he represented himself as a law enforcement officer. During a Garrity interview with Post, Mr. Barney admitted he committed an unauthorized act, which purported to be an act of his office to benefit himself. Post did not find any mitigating or aggravating circumstances in this case, and again is recommending a one-year suspension. I'll turn the time over to you, Mr. Barney.
Did he not retire?
I'm sorry.
Retired.
Okay. Thank you. I'll turn the time over to you.
Yes,
Barney. I was notified of this on the 20th of December, so I did not receive this motion for the default or an opportunity to respond. I had spoken with Austin Aubrey on the phone when I did my interview, and I requested that if I'm contacted, I'd prefer it be by phone or email. I did not get that. It was sent certified mail, which I'm sure they can attest did not get to me. It was sent back here. So I'd like an opportunity to respond to that. Basically, it's fairly accurate. There's two things I don't agree with in it, and I'd like to state my points on those two things.
Please do.
Well, I just got this today, so I haven't even seen it.
He's already in service.
Okay.
So we could have Austin explain the service.
So as Mr. Barney explained, he did participate in a Garrity interview. That was on September 8th of last year. November 8th, I mailed out the notice of agency action. The Postal Service has documented that they left a notice at his residence on November 12th, but nobody was at the residence to claim the paperwork, so they kept it at their local office until November 27th. On December 6th, he was returned to Post as unclaimed. A default was then sent to Mr. Barney on December 9th at the same address that was used for the notice of agency action. And Mr. Barney did receive the default on December 16th.
Yeah, that's correct. I should have in here in my interview with him is my request that any contact with me be done through email or phone so I get the notice. When this initially started over the summer, I didn't get a notice because it was sent through mail, and I do have an issue getting my mail. I live on a highway by the mouth of the canyon, so my post delivery guy leaves it on the box and it gets blown away by the canyon. So that is why I made that request, and it should be on this recording that that's how I asked to be served. And when I did get the notice on the 20th, the email from him on the 20th is because I got this letter from the post office, went in and picked it up, and then sent him an email asking what this is about. And so I'm missing that factual basis, which you just read now, which I guess I'm supposed to sign to if I agree to.
May I?
Yeah.
So just to make sure that the record is clear, Mr. Barney, are you asking the council then to send this back to Post for a hearing before an administrative law judge? What are you asking
if,
for?
If we could just go back to November 8th when it was sent out and give me an opportunity to see the document. It's apparently it's on here, but I just got this today. I put in a grandma request, and then because of the holidays, it was available Monday afternoon.
Rich, do you know if that is within the council's discretion? I do not.
So the administrative law judge entered the default against him. So the council is required to accept his findings of the default.
Okay. And so there's 30 days for me
to make a request. So from December 20th to today, that's within my 30 days of when I've been notified, I guess.
So that request would be to the ALJ.
Okay, where would that be? I can go over there.
That's through Post.
That's it, Ms. Billy?
It's through Post, the organization. So.
And so what you're requesting, Mr. Barney, is a continuance of this hearing today?
Yeah, I'd like to be able to read it and respond to it. I mean, the information is fairly accurate. I did something stupid. I haven't denied that to anyone. From my agency interviews to post interviews, just some of the factual information is not correct.
So it sounds like procedurally your next step is with the ALJ.
I think Mr. Austin is correct. I guess the motion would be to continue until that.
We have the authority in the council to continue this to the next hearing date.
We can certainly entertain a motion to give Mr. Barney until, I guess it would be the March council meeting. If someone would like to make a motion to that effect.
Can I ask Mr. Barney a question?
You certainly can.
I'm just curious if you are currently employed or seeking employment as a peace officer.
No, I have my own business now. But yeah, I might want to be a cop again. I'm not wanting to give up my certification.
I would move that we rehear this at the next post-council meeting.
Okay, we have a motion from Sheriff Sparks to push this to March of 2022. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
We have a second from Sheriff Curtis. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Any opposed before? Any opposed? Hearing none, it passes.
Just so the council is aware, we had this discussion because of the mix-up. We legally went through the proper process that we're required to do. But because of what happened and what unfolded, we are required by our administrative rule to bring it before the body the very next meeting, which is today. So,
and he still was within his appeal window. If he was not within his appeal window.
Then we would be stuck. So, yeah. So thank you.
All right. Could you direct me where I go?
While I'm here, I can take care of this.
You want me to
the ALJ or?
Do you want me to take the outside and just explain?
Yeah,
the
well, I'm
just Captain Garcia. We'll
just want to
thank
be
you.
Outside.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
And just briefly for the new, I understand there's some new members. Just. This was a little bit of a unique situation, but just as a matter of going forward, when there is a default, when the post practice is to send letters out by certified mail, and when there is a default, that is considered a binding finding by the ALJ, just as if there was he made a findings of fact or a waiver was signed. It sort of is in the same conclusory fashion. So.
All right, the next matter would be Joseph Carter. Is Mr. Carter or his counsel present? Can somebody check to see?
Mr. Carter, I'm going to be here today.
It sounds like he is not, Vice Chairman.
All right.
Mr. Carter was formerly employed with Summit County Sheriff's Office. He resigned in July of 2021. The sustained allegation against him is for willfully falsifying any information to obtain a certification. He waived his right to a hearing and, again, in doing so, admitted as true the allegations in the notice of agency action. And in this case, Post is recommending the baseline sentence of a 2-year suspension. The facts of the case are that Mr. Carter committed lewdness involving a child as a teenager. He was not criminally investigated at the time because the incidents were not reported to law enforcement. Later in 2011, Mr. Carter submitted a post application for basic training, failed to disclose being involved in prior unlawful sexual conduct. He attended basic training, obtained the special functions, basic corrections, and law enforcement certifications, applied to a local law enforcement agency, and did not disclose his involvement in unlawful sexual conduct. Mr. Carter was hired in 2012. Subsequently, the sex offense was reported and criminally investigated in 2013. That case was declined for prosecution, and Mr. Carter did not report the investigation to his agency. In 2021, Carter was again investigated for the same type of offense after a second victim filed a complaint. That complaint was criminally investigated, and in that investigation, Mr. Carter admitted to lewdness involving a child. However, criminal charges were not filed because of the statute of limitations.
This investigation, as well as the prior one, were reported to Mr. Carter's agency and Post, and Mr. Carter later resigned in lieu of termination. Post determined that Mr. Carter had omitted information about sexual misconduct on his application. During the Garrity interview with Post, he admitted to applying pressure to his waist with one of the victims for sexual gratification. He said that he did not remember every single little incident. That's a quote when he completed his Post application. The findings of the Post investigation substantiated the charge of willfully falsifying information to obtain a certification. Again, he waived his right to a hearing, and the recommendation is a 2-year suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions?
Is there a conflict on this one? I work with him.
Sheriff Rigby will be conflicted out.
Yes. Is that something I need to also be conflicted out since it's a county deputy?
I mean, Stevens is out as well on conflict. Any others? Any questions from the council for Mr. Hale? Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion accept.
Motion from John Crowley to accept Post recommendations. Do I hear a second?
Sure.
Sheriff Parks, second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the next matter is Lee Christensen. Is Mr. Christensen here or his counsel? I'm getting a no on that, so I'll proceed. Mr. Christensen was formerly employed by Uinta County Sheriff's Office, resigned in lieu of termination in July of 2020. The sustained allegations against Mr. Christensen are for stalking and electronic communication harassment. He defaulted and did not respond to the notice of agency action. And in this matter, Post is recommending the baseline sentence of revocation of his peace officer certification. A brief summary of those facts. Mr. Christensen was investigated for attempting to contact his estranged girlfriend repeatedly over a 24-hour period after she told him to stop contacting her. During that time, Mr. Christensen sent her over 100 text messages and called her 60 times in a single hour. He also reportedly drove by her home 3 times. He admitted in his Garrity interview with Post to sending those text messages and the calls after she told him to stop, and pled guilty to a reduced charge of stalking as a Class A misdemeanor to be held in abeyance. Again, he failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and Post is recommending revocation.
Any questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we follow the recommendation of the Post investigator for revocation for Lee Christensen.
Thank you, Chief. Second?
I'll second.
Sheriff, second from Don Crowley. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll entertain a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, moving on to the matter of Ash Lynn Christiansen. Ms. Christiansen was formerly employed by Salt Lake City 911, resigned in November of 2021. The sustained allegation against her is for willful falsification of information to obtain a certification. Ms. Christiansen waived her right to a ALJ hearing and admitted as true the allegations in the notice of agency action. In this case, Post is recommending a 2-year suspension, which is the baseline sentence for the classification. A summary of the facts involving Ms. Christiansen: she was investigated by Post for willful falsification of information to obtain certification. The investigation disclosed that on October 9th, 2019, she submitted an application to Post to attend dispatcher basic training. On the Post application, Ms. Christiansen
did not document any marijuana use. She then applied with a local police agency and did document marijuana use on that application. Ms. Christiansen contacted Post about the discrepancy and later resigned from SLC 911 in November. During her Garrity interview with Post, she said that in June of 2019, she went to a graduation party and used a dab pen. She was told that the dab pen contained marijuana and that she felt high after using it. She indicated that she intentionally left the marijuana use off of her application because she did not think that she would get hired if documented. Again, she waived her right to a hearing, and Post is asking for a 2-year suspension. And assuming you want to address the council? Okay, I'll turn the time over to you then.
Ms. Christiansen, thank you.
I obviously don't agree with the 2-year suspension. And I just have a few things to say about my passion for being an officer. And just want to start off by saying thank you for giving me an opportunity to discuss with you guys my past decision. Even though this process has been disheartening, it also has reconfirmed exactly why I want to become an officer. The passion and drive I've had to become an officer has been ongoing since I was 16 years old. From taking criminal justice college courses to being an emergency dispatcher for 2 years, which has led me to this point today. Everything I've done since I fell in love with the law enforcement universe and serving the public is to fulfill my dream of wearing the badge and wanting to do what I know as a true love. That is why I stand in front of you today. This has halted my journey to the police academy. It is now the only thing keeping me from joining the police academy. And I understand I've made a mistake, and in no way was I meaning to be untruthful or deceitful when it simply was an oversight on my part that I take full responsibility for. I understand the integrity of Post and being a police officer now more than ever, but I don't want this mistake to determine my future and what I've worked so hard for, and I will stop at nothing to accomplish my goals of becoming an officer. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the council? For either Mr. Hale or Ms. Christiansen?
Nothing else from Post, Chairman.
Any questions?
So, Ashlyn, are you, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Chief Soap.
Ashlyn, are you currently working with the department, or are you just going to self-sponsor, or what's your intention?
I applied for the Salt Lake City Police Academy.
I need your phone.
Oh, sorry. I applied for the Salt Lake City Police Academy back in August, and then the whole Garrity interview with Post happened. I quit with dispatch in November, so now I'm just waiting to see what happens here, because that's what'll determine where I go next and what I do with the police academy.
Question?
Yeah.
John, if she would have disclosed this on her application, would that revoke her from going to the academy? So I know there's a waiting period.
That would be for Dusty. I don't have the dates right in front of me, so Sergeant Hamlin will be able to.
Sergeant Hamlin?
I'm covering for another officer. How old were you when you filled it out, the dispatcher?
I was 18.
And then you used the one, at what age were you when you used them?
I was 17.
So there would have been a waiting period at that point, but where she was 18, it still would do that. So,
Vice Chair, a question.
Yes.
Sheriff Brigby. Ashlyn, do you mind if I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, yes. In the facts, it says that as part of the Garrity interview with Post, you intentionally left marijuana off your application. But it sounds like from your statement, it was some kind of a accident or inadvertent. So do you dispute the facts here, or what are your thoughts?
No, I intentionally left it out because I was afraid that if I disclosed it, I wouldn't have received my job through dispatch, which I wouldn't have. I've confirmed that with the Salt Lake City Dispatch Department, that if I would have disclosed it, I wouldn't have received my job. So that's why I left it out intentionally.
Just to start, Mayor Walker?
So it was illegal marijuana use in the state of Utah?
Yes.
And that would have been a 2-year wait before she could apply that.
When you respond, you have to step up to the mic.
Oh, yes, it was.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Swanson?
When would this suspension be backdated to? When would it start? Since this was in the past.
Because she was still employed, so it would go from the date.
November. Her resignation.
Yeah, her resignation date.
November. Yes, November 22nd.
So it goes from November last year?
Yeah, November of 2021.
Any other questions from the council? Do I have a motion?
Make a motion we accept the recommendation to your suspension.
I have a motion from Colonel Rappich to accept the recommendation of Postal Council. Sheriff Sparks?
A second.
There's a second from Sheriff Sparks. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Bryant Davis, is Mr. Davis or his counsel present?
I'm receiving an indication that he is not.
All right. Mr. Hale?
Mr. Davis was employed by the Department of Corrections. He was terminated in April of 2021. The sustained allegations against him were for intoxication, aggravated assault involving domestic violence, and fitness for duty. He defaulted and did not respond to the notice of agency action, and Post is recommending the baseline sentence of revocation in this case.
Before we get to facts, is this one we need to close between you and the investigator?
This is one where it appears to me that it's not the centerpiece, but there is some mental health issues, and Jorgensen may want to close the
If Post is going to present mental health issues and his medical history to the council, it should be closed.
Can we bifurcate it so we can talk about that, which we can here with the public present, and keep out of that discussion that which has to do with fitness for duty, and then if we need to, we can close the council meeting?
I think I can do that, Chairman. Let me just make a couple of quick redactions to my notes, and I think that we can accomplish that.
Thank you.
Does Post have any issues with that, Lieutenant?
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Hale.
Okay, the summary is Bryant Davis was investigated by a local law enforcement agency for an incident involving domestic violence. The investigation disclosed that Mr. Davis was intoxicated and engaged in an argument with his wife while they were in a hotel room. During the argument, Mr. Davis pushed his wife onto a bed when she bit him. Davis then smothered her with a pillow, and she screamed for help. Davis admitted to being drunk. He also told officers to shoot him and that he did not want to live. Mr. Davis's wife told officers that Davis had covered her face with a pillow and that she could not breathe. When questioned about smothering his wife with a pillow, Davis admitted that he had done that. During the Garrity interview with his agency, Davis admitted to consuming a lot of alcohol and being extremely intoxicated. He said that he did not recall smothering his wife with a pillow, but that if his wife had said that he did so, then it was true. He was terminated from his job. Later, during a Garrity interview with Post, he again said that he was very intoxicated at the time. In that interview, he did admit to covering his wife's face, his wife's face with a pillow after she bit him. He said that he did so to quiet their argument and that he probably did it a little bit out of anger. Again, he failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and Post is seeking recommending revocation.
With regard to that portion of the allegations, are there any questions from the council?
I'll have to recuse myself from this. Travis Moore will be recusing from corrections.
Any other recusals? Are there any questions for Mr. Hale regarding that portion of the allegations? Okay.
And then I don't think the rest of the matters.
I think you may be right, Chief Swanson. All right. We have a motion from Chief Swanson, a second from John Crowley, to accept revocation of Mr. Davis. Any discussion regarding that motion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing no opposed, that passes. I guess there's a question, Director. Do we need to look at the fitness for duty issue?
Not at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on to the case of Anthony Gonzalez. Is Mr. Gonzalez?
He indicated he would not be able to make it today.
Okay.
Mr. Gonzalez or his counsel? They are not present.
Mr. Gonzalez was previously employed with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. He was terminated in October of 2020. The sustained allegation against him is for sexual conduct while on duty. He defaulted, meaning he did not respond to the notice of agency action. In this case, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension, which is a downward deviation from the baseline 3-year suspension due to the mitigating factor of the minimal nature of the offense. The facts were that Mr. Gonzalez was investigated for sexual conduct while on duty. During his Garrity interviews with his agency and with Post, he admitted to grabbing the buttocks of another deputy while they were kissing and hugging on duty. The agency sustained the allegation and terminated his employment. Those are the brief facts. Again, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension.
Any questions for Mr. Hale? Hearing none, we have a motion.
I'll make the motion we accept Post's recommendation on a 1.5-year suspension.
We have a motion from Sheriff Curtis for accept Post's recommendation. Do I hear a second?
Second.
We have a second from Travis Knorr. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll entertain a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It passes. Thank you.
Next up is the matter of Spencer Holmes. Is Mr. Holmes or his counsel here? It appears that they are not.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Holmes was employed by St. George Police Department. He was terminated in this past December of 2021. The sustained allegation against Mr. Holmes is for unauthorized access of BCI records and for a Garrity violation. His case was heard by the ALJ, and I believe that you each have the findings of fact and conclusions from the ALJ. Post is recommending revocation of his law enforcement certification in this case. The facts are that Mr. Holmes was investigated for unauthorized access of records maintained by the Bureau of Criminal Bureau of Criminal Identification, BCI. The investigation disclosed that Holmes unlawfully accessed BCI records on November 6, 2020. He accessed vehicle records relating to an individual who was dating his estranged wife. The investigation also found that on August 8, 2018, Mr. Holmes accessed BCI vehicle and driver's license records for another individual that he suspected was in a romantic relationship with his wife. St. George Police Department sustained a BCI violation for the 2020 offense, but not the incident from 2018. He was issued a 40-hour unpaid suspension and a letter of reprimand. He was also removed from specialty units and placed on a 6-month probation. On January 12, 2021, the case was screened with the county attorney, but charges were not filed due to insufficient information from the criminal investigator. During the post-Garrity interviews, Holmes stated he did not know anything about the individual he queried in the August of 2018 incident until October of that year. However, he told the St. George Police Department investigator during their Garrity interview, the St. George Garrity interview, that he knew the individual who he ran in July, or he knew who the individual was in July prior to running those records. During the post-Garrity interview, Mr. Holmes said that he accessed the other individual's records in 2020 for a law enforcement purpose. However, in the St. George Garrity interview, That was contradicted. He said it was not for a law enforcement purpose. A hearing was held before the ALJ in October of 2021, and the ALJ subsequently issued findings of fact, and then more recently issued a corrected findings of fact, which again I believe that the council has. Again, the baseline recommendation under the guidelines is revocation, and that's Post's recommendation in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions for Mr. Hale? Hearing no questions, do we have a motion?
Motion to accept the recommendations.
We have a motion from Mayor Walker to accept the Post recommendation. Second. We have a second from Chief Self. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hale. Christopher Lyon. Is Mr. Lyon or his counsel present?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lyon?
Yes, sir.
Hello.
All right.
I will read a summary to the council and then give you an opportunity to respond. Mr. Lyon was, or is, I should say, employed with the Department of Corrections. The sustained allegations against him were for unlawful taking, possessing of protected wildlife. That's an over-limit violation involving the fish and crayfish rule violation using bluegill as bait. He waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing, admitting as true the facts in the notice of agency action. And Post's recommendation in this case is a letter of caution. The brief facts of this case are as follows. Mr. Lyon caught about 20 bluegill fish at a community pond. He said he thought the limit on the bluegill was 50. After his initial reading of the Wildlife Proclamation booklet, missing a separate section regarding different limits at community ponds. Mr. Lyon took the fish home and cut them up and froze them, intending to use them as bait for an upcoming fishing trip. After using one of the fish as bait, Mr. Lyon reread the proclamation and saw the section about community ponds, realized that there was a limit of 2 fish from the community pond. He contacted DWR and self-reported the violations. He was issued a written warning for taking too many fish from the community pond and improperly using the fish as bait. He also self-reported receiving the written warning to his chain of command. After he received it, the baseline suspension for the violation is a 6-month suspension, and Post is seeking a downward deviation, as I mentioned, to a letter of caution because of the minimal nature of the offense and the self-reporting. And that's all I have.
Thank you.
Any questions before I turn the time over to Mr. Lyon?
Any questions for Mr. Hale? Mr. Lyon, would you like to speak to the council?
I just wanted to apologize for my negligence. I've taken steps to correct it on my end to make sure it doesn't happen again. I've tried to be upright and honest throughout the process once I realized I'd made the mistake. So that's all I have.
Any questions for Mr. Lyon from the council? I think Travis Nora will have to be recusing from this one. All right.
Nothing further from Post.
Any questions for anyone? Hearing no questions.
We have a motion from John Crowley to accept Post recommendation. We have a second from Molly Sweeney. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Lyon.
Piper Palmer.
Is Piper Palmer or her counsel present?
Are they present?
I'm receiving an indication that she is not.
All right. You may proceed, Mr. Hale.
Okay. Ms. Palmer was formerly employed by the Weber County Sheriff's Office. She resigned in August of 2021. The sustained allegations against her were for intoxication and disorderly conduct. She waived her right to a hearing, admitting as true the allegations in the notice of agency action. Post is recommending a one-year suspension in this case, which is an upward deviation from the three-month baseline sentence, and that is the reason for that is because there were two separate incidents and multiple charges involved. The facts of that case are as follows. On December 31st, 2020, Ms. Palmer and her boyfriend got into a possible domestic incident while driving to a party. Ms. Palmer was intoxicated and grabbed her boyfriend around the neck from the back seat while he was driving. The boyfriend pulled over and called the police for assistance. Excuse me. While the officers were on scene, Ms. Palmer yelled loudly at her boyfriend using profanity in a residential setting and yelled at the officers. Ms. Palmer grabbed one of the officer's heads and kicked at the other officer. Ms. Palmer was placed in handcuffs, and she yelled at the officers to shoot her. She was later released from the scene with a supervisor from work. In the second incident, May 15th of 2020, Ms. Palmer became intoxicated while attending a party at a friend's home. She ran through the yards of private residences and into a public park. Ms. Palmer's friends tried to get her back in the house, but she ran from them and yelled at them, telling them to shoot her. The friends called the police to deal with Palmer. She was put in handcuffs and placed in the back of a police car and taken to the jail for intoxication. Ms. Palmer continued yelling, and in fact, a 911 call was received from a block away about a woman screaming. She was charged with intoxication and pled guilty. Again, she waived her rights, and Post's recommendation is a one-year suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions for Mr. Hale from anyone of the council?
Make the motion. I don't think one-year suspension fits this at all. I would actually motion for revocation.
Revocation. Revocation. We have a motion from Chief Swanson for revocation on Piper Palmer. Do I have a second? I have a second from Mayor Walker. Discussion on the motion.
I do have a question for the investigator.
Sure.
So it appears to me from the facts of this case that there are potentially two other violations, domestic violence assault and assault on a police officer. Was there insufficient evidence for those, or were those investigated?
The boyfriend refused to cooperate with any investigation or prosecution, and the officers indicated that they did not feel like victims or that she intended to assault them.
Any other discussion on the motion for revocation? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion for revocation on Piper Palmer, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion for revocation passes.
Devin Rich.
Is
Mr. Rich present or his counsel?
It appears not, Chairman.
You may proceed, Mr. Hale.
Mr. Rich was not employed in a law enforcement capacity at the time of the sustained allegation or the time of the allegation that was sustained against him for criminal trespass. He defaulted and did not appear. And in this case, Post is recommending a one-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the baseline of a six-month suspension, and that is because of a prior post-investigation case and because of his failure to appear in court. And is that why you don't believe he's going to show? Is that warrant still active?
The warrant is still active, and he's never responded to any paperwork from Post.
Okay. The brief facts of that case are as follows. Mr. Rich was investigated by a local police agency for trespassing. He was found to be in an apartment complex that was under construction, surrounded by a chain link fence designed to exclude intruders. He said that he was retrieving a skateboard that was left behind by a friend. He was cited for trespassing, and a charge of trespassing was filed in the local justice court. Mr. Rich failed to appear, and a warrant was issued. Post was unable to make contact with him despite calling and emailing him and visiting addresses that were listed for him. He refused to participate in the Post investigation. Again, there was a default in this case, and because of the factors that I identified, Post is seeking a, or recommending a one-year suspension as opposed to the six-month baseline.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions for Mr. Hale?
Can you clarify on the previous Post investigation?
Yeah, I can share some information with you about that. I believe it was for reckless driving, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe he defaulted on that case as well.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Do you know what the sanction was for the previous violation?
We can ask, what was the sanction for the previous violation?
It sounds like it was a one-year suspension as well.
Make a recommendation.
John Crowley?
Move it up to a maximum of a category violation of at least a year and a half. Because of the multiple violations and not following through with this court.
We have
an outstanding warrant.
We have a motion by John Crowley for a year and a half suspension.
Second.
Do I hear a second? We have a second from Colonel Rappich. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of a year and a half suspension for Devin Rich, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No opposed. That passes. Logan Roseman. Is Mr. Roseman or his counsel present? Apparently they're not here. Mr. Hale?
Apparently not. This is our final matter. Mr. Roseman was employed previously by Grantsville Police Department. He resigned in July of 2020. The sustained allegation against him were for DUI, impaired driving, open container, and a weapon carry while under the influence of alcohol. He defaulted, again, meaning he did not respond to the notice of agency action. And in this case, Post is recommending a 2.5-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the guidelines, which call for a 1-year suspension. And the reason for that is that the misconduct involved multiple charges on multiple days. And at the time of his arrest for DUI, Mr. Roseman was 2 times the legal limit. In this case, Mr. Roseman was investigated on July 10th of 2020 by a law enforcement agency in another state for DUI, for carrying a weapon while under the influence, for injury to a child, and for leaving the scene of an accident in an open container. In January of 2021, Mr. Roseman was investigated locally, for DUI, carrying a weapon under the influence and open container. In that case, Mr. Roseman provided a blood sample which tested 0.19 and also tested positive for diazepam and nordiazepam. In March of 2021, Mr. Roseman pled guilty to DUI, open container, and weapon carry while under the influence regarding the July 2020 offenses. Later that month, also in March of 2021, Mr. Roseman entered a plea to be held in abeyance to an amended charge of impaired driving regarding the January 2021 offenses. The traffic violation Roseman was stopped for, along with the weapon charge in that matter, were dismissed with prejudice. Mr. Roseman told Post that he did want to participate in the Post investigation, but failed to appear for his Garrity interview and did not respond to subsequent attempts to contact him. Again, there was an order of default signed by the administrative law judge, and Post is recommending a 2.5-year suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions from the council? Mr. Hale.
Sheriff Hersey.
Sir, when it comes to the 5-year-old, do we have any other facts as far as injury to a child?
The state where the incident occurred charges them just if there's children in the vehicle. So there was no injuries. It's just the fact that the child was in the vehicle is what they go by.
Chief Swanson?
Again, it reminds me of the other case. I see a pattern here, and I don't think that 2.5 is enough. I would motion for revocation on this as well.
We have a motion by Chief Swanson for revocation on Logan Roseman. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second from Janetta Williams. Discussion on the motion. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor of revocation for Logan Roseman, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hale.
Thank you.
All right. Looks like we are to the drug policy discussions. Director Stevenson.
Council, if this thing on my face makes you uncomfortable, I will not take it personally if you don't look me in the eye, or I can cover this mess up with a mask if you desire. Yeah, little pre-cancer stuff I'm getting taken care of. All right. These next two items on the agenda directly are related to hiring. And I've had discussions with Chief Swanson and a couple others within our law enforcement community because of the challenges we're seeing in hiring. I'm not making a plea to make a change. I'm just throwing this out to you so we can have a discussion, because anything that relates to employment, I feel like this body needs to be involved with, even if it's a policy decision, even though by statute policies are not required to come before this body. I definitely don't want to be an obstructionist to you getting people employed and getting positions filled. So I think this will be a good discussion. This is not a foreign topic for this group. We've brought it up quite frequently. In fact, the last major discussion we had was in 2015, in September. Sheriff Tracy at the time, I think, was chairing the council and had some questions and wanted us to revisit the drug policy. As it stands now, and Chief Swanson, please jump in if you are inclined. If you look at the matrix that's on the first page under controlled substance use, and again, we condensed this. This matrix was a lot bigger, and we really condensed it with the subcommittee, and I reported back in January of 2016 and was ratified and accepted by the council at that time. As you see, the waiting period at the top, and then illegitimate use, legal in-state use, emergency medical use. And then we've had the substance schedules up top. And then you can see, like for an illegitimate use, see criminal violations subsection for the waiting period. If it's a Class B misdemeanor, then it's a one-year wait or a two-year wait, and so on and on. That's what we reference. If it's a substance schedule 2, it's a four-year wait for illegitimate use. So a very popular drug right now, Adderall, is kind of taking front lead for drug use regarding prescriptions. So in that case, if somebody uses Adderall in a particular situation for studying, we see it with in the college ranks on finals week to help stay awake or stay focused, they'll take an Adderall. Well, that's, by this matrix, a four-year waiting period. Legal in-state use, so this addresses the marijuana issue, where in several states it is legal to use it recreationally. However, we've had discussions about law enforcement cannot do that because of 18 U.S.C. blah, blah, blah. Thank you. Which prohibits an officer from possessing, or anyone for that matter, possessing a firearm from the date of their last usage. So if you have a medical card, for example, it has to be the expiration date, and then that year period starts. And the reason why I say that is because I've had quite a few calls, hypothetical calls, about officers and medical marijuana use. If they have one, they cannot possess a firearm by federal law. Emergency use, how we look at this, if somebody has like an intense migraine or breaks a leg and somebody gives them a pain pill, we look at that as emergency use. Because they're going to subsequently follow up with a doctor and probably get their own prescription. Also, if somebody has a prescription for that drug and they don't have it with them, we would consider that also emergency use. So I throw it out there, Chief.
The council, that these are applicable for dispatchers. This certification as well.
Yes.
maybe we jump to that first, and we can go back to the officer, because I think this is going to be an easy fix. If you go to the second page, for dispatchers, you'll see that legal in-state use, we have NA. It's really a year. We are proposing to change that, and this is going to require a vote from the council for support. But the reason why dispatchers, if they use marijuana in, say, Colorado, they're not required to carry a firearm, so there really is no reason not to, or no reason to apply a waiting period, which we currently do. So I throw that out to the council.
And I guess my problem with that is it seems kind of ridiculous to me for a college student, say, in St. George, to go down to Beaver Dam and smoke a joint and have to wait 2 years, where they'd have just driven 15 more minutes to Mesquite and smoked. They don't have to wait any time. Right. Now, it's just not logical to me.
I throw that as a discussion. What do we want to do? What do you want to do as a body?
Discussion. Questions from the council. Mayor Walker.
Is there no way around the medical card use? Like, there's no way around this federal statutes. We, you know, as this becomes more prevalent, a lot of people choose it for pain, you know, relief over opiates, which is, frankly, in my opinion, it's a better choice than what I've seen in my career, people who use opiates. But I think I agree with you. I don't see why, if it's legally used, I think we ought to consider the legal use. I mean, I think every state around us except Idaho, right, is the only.
I think so, yes. In Wyoming?
I would just make one comment relative to Chief Swanson's. There is, I think, an element of logic to it. That somebody may have to have a waiting period when they use it in a place that's illegal, as opposed to using it in a place that's legal. And that's nothing about the use of the drug, but more about their obedience to the law. I mean, that's one of the things that we expect of our law enforcement officers to be able to follow, and our dispatchers to be able to follow, not just the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law as well. So I think, although that's a persuasive argument, I think there is also the issue of just whether or not somebody is willing to follow and abide by the rules that are set forth for them.
And I guess my counter to that would be, once they're hired, they can no longer use it, period. So then they would have to follow the law. It just seems like 2 years and 0 years by stepping across the border makes no sense to me.
So I have a question on that. From a post-council perspective, speaking specifically to dispatchers, we've had the waiting period for officers. If they use medical marijuana as a dispatcher, does post-council see any violation with that? Because it doesn't violate the, so it's a completely, we don't have the federal oversight. Here's the example, and Chief Swanson, I agree with you, it's a conflict trying to figure this out in my head. Here's how I reconcile that, putting the marijuana part aside, and this is really simple. In the state of Utah, if I shoot a pheasant from the roadway, it's a Class B misdemeanor. In South Dakota, I can do it all day long. It's not a violation.
you've got to dumb things down for me.
You're not trying to hire dispatchers. I'm not trying to hire pheasants.
I do have one comment. In changing this, because I work in the sheriff's office and we deal with corrections and stuff, so I have a couple correction deputies that aren't firearm certified. Would this change it for them, being an SFO versus a dispatcher?
So SFO, they still can't carry a firearm.
Right.
If they were just BCO, and attorneys check me, I don't see a problem with it. But because they have the SFO component,
yeah, BCO,
they can still carry a firearm.
And that could get confusing because our BCO officers carry firearms. So
well, here you go.
Case by case, if that was the case. Yeah.
But from a statute and description, the certification, it's very clear. Yeah. But again, administrators can use these officers the way they see fit, like on medical runs. You know, at Salt County, they'd arm somebody and they take them up to UMet. So
I have a question, just clarification from Colonel Rakich. Were you suggesting that dispatchers, if they have a medical marijuana card, would be able to use marijuana medically while employed, or are we just discussing prior?
No, I wasn't. In fact, okay. Those are employment policy issues that are still, I think, being worked out.
Okay.
The delineation I was making is that really the constraint we have is the federal requirement.
Okay.
And then that federal requirement is specific to being able to carry a firearm. Or with dispatchers, that federal required, they don't carry a firearm. It's not part of their certification, and so we don't have that constraint. Where with law enforcement officers, we absolutely do.
Absolutely. Thank you for the clarification.
Yes. So, in the matters of dispatch, this matrix.
Does the council support eliminating the year waiting period for a dispatcher if they use marijuana legally in the jurisdiction they use it? That's what I'm trying to ascertain here.
I think that makes sense. If it's legally, I agree with you. If legally used, I think we should eliminate the waiting period.
Is that something you need a motion on, Director?
Yes.
I move.
Mayor Walker?
That we eliminate the waiting period for legal marijuana use in the case of dispatchers.
Okay, we have a motion by Mayor Walker to eliminate the one-year waiting period for use of marijuana before they can apply to the academy. Do we have a second?
Major, did you need the entire matrix accepted or just that change?
Well, right now, just that change, unless somebody on the council sees a more in-depth change, and I think that would require a subcommittee to do that, like we did back in 2015. So, yeah, right now I'm just going for that change because that has a direct impact on some issues at the current.
As presented?
Yes.
I can amend that motion.
Okay, we have an amended motion then to accept the matrix that's listed on page 2 of this document that everyone has hopefully received. Do I have a second to that?
We're not talking about all of them, just this.
Just this one, the dispatchers.
We're going to go back to law enforcement. Talk about the Adderall as well.
Do I have a second?
I have a question, if I could.
Sure, Mark.
So, since we're going in this direction, we do have 19-year-olds who are certified as corrections officers, not certified as special functions officers or law enforcement officers. Do we want to include dispatchers and correctional officers who would both be folks who are not certified to carry firearms?
Again, I think DOC has made it evident that they use BCO to carry firearms. So I don't know. That might be a management challenge to keep those separate.
Allows BCO or grants them the authority to carry a firearm. So that's where we run into the problem of, because that certification allows them to, they are subject to that federal law.
Do you hear that, Sheriff?
I did. I'm just thinking that, you know, a few years ago, we changed the code, and the code was changed for restricted persons possessing firearms to eliminate that applying to corrections officers. It seems like this is very much in the same vein.
Okay,
can I second the mayor yet?
I haven't had a second yet.
I thought you made a motion.
I did. Mayor Walker made, and I believe it was a substitute motion to accept the matrix that's been made reference to.
I second.
We have a second from Alan Swanson. Any discussion as to the motion? All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Perhaps what we also need to do is talk about a subcommittee that you were talking about to look at other issues.
That's up to this body. We've done it in the past.
And we came up with this current matrix. But maybe if we want to, maybe as we go down this road of talking about one-time use, maybe it warrants a subcommittee. I don't know.
I think it probably does. And in fact, want to put together a subcommittee and ask for members.
That little thing, we're beginning to have ourselves. So right now, if the college student uses Adderall one time,
They've got to wait 4 years before they go to post. Now, 6 years ago, I called Director Stevenson because I had a guy that was under that, and I asked him if he could reduce that to 2 years. I mean, the kid was a straight A, had a master's degree, but one time, as a college student, to study all night, he took one Adderall. And then that squeaky clean, passed psych, passed poly, and you granted me that. You said we'll make him wait 2 years. So the kid waited 2 years. Now he's been with me for 6 years, and I'm getting ready to promote him. So I've got another kid, same example, but now you're saying you don't have the power to reduce that to 2 years. So this kid's got to wait 4 years for one Adderall, where you can smoke marijuana 1,000 times and wait a year. And so what I would like to suggest is that we give the director some discretion based on the intent of what this is about, so that when those one-offs come up, he has the discretion to say, okay, you know what, we're just going to make him wait 2 years instead of 4 years.
So I'll give you the history of how we came to this, actually the one or two matrices ago. My time was starting to be consumed by appeals because of the discretion. And I articulated to the council that we needed to lock it in and narrowly define what this body wants. Because just kind of, as I think it's uncomfortable for one person, at least for me, to decide whether what constitutes good use versus bad use. I mean, Adderall, for all intents and purposes, is it's meth. It's legalized meth. And so I don't want to be inconsistent. And so if we are going to give a little more latitude to me as the director, I would want some pretty clear guidelines to say, okay, this is acceptable and this is not, this use. Not just me capriciously or arbitrarily saying, hey, you did it for studying, but you did it just for fun. You're good, you're not. And so, but it's still one use. And that's the appeal that's going to happen, and that's what I became inundated with. And then also, you know, administrators calling me and saying, hey, let's do this. And then somebody else, another administrator says, no, I'm going to hold the line. And so I just want some consistency either way. But I'll do what this body wants.
Implemented from time of disclosure or from time of use as far as the waiting period?
Time of use.
So if someone used 4 years ago and applied, they'd be checked.
Correct.
Well, it sounds like it's complicated enough. Maybe we do need a subcommittee. I wonder if there's anybody on the council who would like to be on that subcommittee.
Vice Chair?
Can it match the marijuana?
This body can do whatever they see fit.
You guys have a lot of authority.
I mean, I didn't know about Adderall in college. I kind of, now I'm thinking I wish I would have.
Such as the federal code that would apply to a Schedule II substance that doesn't apply to the Schedule I or Schedule II.
I can't think of any. Can you? I look to the
lawyers.
JDs. Okay, I can't think of any.
It sounds like it's at the discretion of the council.
Then to
it does, but I think we probably need a recommendation. I think people need to take a look at this in a little bit more depth than what we've done today. Yeah,
I'd agree with that because you're opening the door saying, okay, Adderall's good. And then next time it comes up, they go, wait, Adderall, you said it's okay, but this one's not.
Precisely.
And then we're going to get, and then the next one. And then I think we're going to be, I think if we get some clear guidelines like Director Stevens wants is.
No, and then I agree that it's becoming even more complicated.
It does. To
start out Adderall alone.
Yeah.
When you're actually dealing with Schedule II drugs. Do we need a motion for a committee?
Do
we need a motion for a committee? Yes. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Yeah.
And what would your motion be?
I'll make a motion that we make a subcommittee to discuss this matrix for Schedule II and Adderall.
And then present our findings
to the post-council.
To post-March
council meeting?
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
And second from Colonel Rappich. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? You have your subcommittee, and I guess it's up to you, Director, to decide who should be on it.
Actually, Vice Chair, I was going to
throw that in your lap.
Do I have any volunteers?
Real quick, though, too, do we want to revisit this in March with the legislative session going on, or do we want to push this to June?
That's a great question.
We will keep track of what's going on legislatively and make any appropriate changes. I think we'll be fine because we usually meet to the end, at the end of March. Session ends, is it the first or second week of March?
First week.
I just met with conflicts of people's schedules,
being able to get together for the committee.
Well, we can do it virtually. I think that will work. I would rather get this done sooner than later because we're getting a lot of applications. So
we need volunteers. Dr. Checkitz, do I hear you raising your hand? Is it maybe the chair of that subcommittee? How many people would you think you would need on that subcommittee?
And how many would you like me to have?
As many as you think you need.
Last time we had four.
Four?
From the council, I think.
Do we have volunteers? Dr. Sween, are you willing to volunteer? Okay, we've got one. Any others? John Crowley. And Mayor Walker, you've got your subcommittee.
Okay, thank you.
And Dr. Checkitz, you should be the chair of it and conduct whatever meetings you think necessary and then report back to the council either in March or perhaps in June.
I'm going to shoot for March.
March, that'd be great. Thank you, Director.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Permission to move forward?
Absolutely.
Next agenda item was brought up by Grantsville Chief Jacob Enslin. He had an applicant who got his Utah certification, and I know this may sound like we're getting into the weeds, but this has some implications across the board when it comes to hiring. We're seeing a lot of out-of-state people come into Utah. In fact, it's increased. Every month we have, you know, more than 10 from out-of-staters. They outnumber our in-staters. That's an accurate statement? Okay. She said, oh, yeah. So that's true. So this particular applicant had a certification in Utah, I believe worked for a couple of years, and then went to the feds. Retires from the feds and comes back and waives and fails the physical fitness portion of the waiver exam or process. So his question is, why do they have to take a PT test under these circumstances? So I throw this out to the council. Do we want to look at the waiver process? I mean, I know that there's a fine balance of making sure that we get good qualified people that come into this state. I believe we can be very selective. They do have a track record in law enforcement. But I just want to, it's just going to be a battle that's going to keep coming up. And the PT seems to be the point of contention for some of these applicants. I don't know. Do you want me to maintain course, or do you want us to adjust? Chief?
Your recommendation, if there's no break in their service in law enforcement, they don't have to take it.
That's not my recommendation.
That's his.
I think that's the chief's.
That's his recommendation.
Thought process, yes.
Okay. I personally, I'm okay with that because there's no requirement once you pass post to do PT ever. I mean,
correct.
Some cities require it, but most don't.
Correct. So. But could a person who is waiving in, there's no break in service from when they got their certification, coming in, do they have an argument saying, why am I subjected to the PT test?
Tests that are available right now, modified Cooper or Cooper?
Well, Cooper's kind of defunct. We have a similar test, but it's I can't remember the exact title, but it's one job, one standard. Mile and a half, push-ups, plank, jump. And then they have the alternative. They have to take it twice, and then they can request to take the UPAT, which is the Utah Police Agility course.
Where in the waiver applicant can go to the alternative test?
Yes. And just trying to put myself in the chief's shoes, timing's of the essence. I mean, you have an applicant, he or she could go somewhere else pretty quick. And I know the speed in which you can get somebody on board is pretty relevant. But again,
Now I'm going to counter-argue that. Well, it's in their applicant's court to make sure that they get through the process as quickly as possible. So, Colonel.
We utilize the UPAT test. I don't know how many have, but there probably is an argument that at some point in time in a person's life, their knees may not be as incredible as they used to be, or that there may be something that maybe a mile and a half run isn't the best idea for a person at 20 years of law enforcement service, at 25, but it doesn't negate the basic expectation the law enforcement officer can be engaged in a physically demanding environment and be successful in that in doing so. I think that's what those people, the people that we serve, expect that. And the UPAT was really designed for that purpose, was to kind of realize that you may get to the point where running a mile and a half isn't the best physical option for you. And it doesn't require that, but it does still have a measurement of, is there a basic level of physical fitness that a person's going to be able to go into the demanding environment of law enforcement that's not getting any easier and be successful in that environment?
I agree. And we have our own PT test that all of our officers have to pass, including me, every year. And so I think you can just leave it up to the individual agencies and waive that as opposed to requirement for a waiver.
So, okay. Eliminating the physical fitness test would require a statute change,
it would.
Mm-hmm. Because it is required by statute, but I think what Richard is saying is correct. You could lower the standard or establish a standard that, you know, doesn't eliminate a great number of people, but still satisfies that statutory requirement.
My staff probably going to kill me for even throwing this out there, but maybe we just use the UPAT. Hold them down. Hold them down. Maybe we just use the UPAT for waivers.
The UPAT's already a lower standard anyway, right?
No. It's easier to pass.
Well, I want to say lower standard.
But I mean,
I would rather run the normal PT test back-to-back than run the UPAT.
I agree.
The UPAT is fast and furious, and I've gotten to the point where I've been able to make myself puke pushing myself on that UPAT to get
to time limit.
Not a passing score, but a better than passing score.
You are an achiever.
But the passing score for LEO right now is 5 minutes and 30 seconds. 5 minutes and 30 seconds is still...
You're moving
on that.
But what we through our research, we try to find an equivalent time to the times for, and you know, the mile and a half run and the push-ups and whatnot. So we feel very confident with that time, but it is it's a laborious process to set that thing up. That's why we try to get them to take at least do two attempts, and if they don't get it, okay, we'll set up the course.
And historically, the problem they have with passing it is simply the run, the mile and a half run. That's we very rarely see a waiver fail on push-ups, plank, or jump.
Is there discretion to modify the criteria then for people in this situation?
No. If somebody has a knee injury or they're just worn out, then they have to get a doctor's note, and the doctor has to request an alternate test, which we have the Airdyne Schwinn bike, right? Oh, we got rid of it. Oh, the one broke.
You measure their max VO2.
Oh, that's right. This is better. We put it on the doctor's shoulders.
The question is, should we change those standards? Yeah. Could we lower the time requirement for the show?
Oh, yeah.
For the run.
It just passes at this point.
We could definitely lower it.
We have an alternate to.
Are we talking about lowering just for waivers or across the board?
I'd say just waivers.
Yeah, I'd say just waivers.
If you can change the criteria, just lower the criteria maybe on waivers.
My question would be, do we set ourselves up for adverse litigation?
From a basic...
Because we're treating
two different applicants as different.
Mm-hmm. So there was a... Irma did a job task analysis back in 99 or 2000, for those that have been around know what I'm talking about. And they came up with almost the exact movements as Cooper and times. It's been a while. And in the past, we've done like what they call the assimilation clause, where we can assimilate a like department and apply that standard, use their research and apply it to our practice. But we have gathered so much data, and we've come up with our own numbers and figures that I feel very confident of where it stands. But we wanted to lower the standard, then that would, that's definitely feasible. But I am concerned about our message saying, okay, here's what's minimally required to do this job, but if you're a waiver, it's not. That's my concern. I'm just throwing this out. I'm not trying to convince you guys to go one way or the other. We're just having a discussion. But I know that it is a challenge for some people. And you guys are the ones that are employing them. Colonel?
I think everyone understands the question. I think that there's an expectation, there's a need to be able to be physically fit and meet the physical demands of a law enforcement profession and do what a law enforcement officer is expected. It's hard to carve out, okay, I'm going to be a law enforcement officer and only do this, or I'm not going to be involved in this. Under any set of circumstances, any day, every one of us is called upon whatever is required to be a law enforcement officer. And we need to be able to do that. We need to know that we're employing people that can do that. And I think the public expects us to be able to do that.
Okay. So, proceed as is.
Status quo.
Yeah, status quo.
Okay. I will report back to Chief Insulin. Okay. And I'm done.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you.
Captain Garcia.
All right, so we've had some discussion lately as going through the curriculum, going back and getting this revamped and up to a research-based model. And going through it, we've kind of been questioning now the teaching of first aid and CPR in the basic academy. As it sits right now and it has sat for a long time, they do receive the training, but there's no certification involved. So POST does not certify, or the entity that teaches does not certify these individuals, and it has been based off of cost. Everybody wants to charge for their certification. So the question is, as of right now, just doing a quick search on the internet, you can find multiple outlets that will teach CPR and first aid, some of the top ones being the National Safety Council, the American Heart Association, and Red Cross. They all mandate that you buy their materials and that you pay their fee to get the individual certified. The question is one, that's a cost burden for POST, but two, I'm unaware of any agencies right offhand, unless somebody can speak differently, that require their officers to maintain that first aid CPR certification, with exception to, I believe, Sheriff Sparks and his medics that are dual employees. So the question is, or the suggestion would be, to get the council's thought and discussion going on whether or not first aid should be continued to be taught in the police academy. That's not saying they don't get anything, because the officers do get an equivalent to like a TCCC or a LEAFER program, which is self-care and buddy care to treat traumatic injuries and injuries that they may encounter, say, in an active shooter type situation. So they're getting training. It's just not labeled first aid or CPR or getting a certification for it. So that's up for discussion, suggestions, and possibly even a motion if council sees fit. I don't know if anybody wants to voice what their particular agency does as it pertains to CPR and first aid, what they require, because that, I think, would shed some light as well.
So just provide history.
Sorry.
Just had a question.
Go ahead.
Have we looked into the idea of people just providing their own documentation of certification to POST, so POST is not responsible for paying for that, but that the applicant need to go to one of these services, pay the $30, and get their certification and provide that, because they're still getting the training, but the financial burden is on the applicant?
I'm sure POST would be able to implement that if that's what this council desired. I think John Jacobs might kill me for saying this, but I think that's something that could be added to the application and attached to the application process. if this council desires.
Well, historically, the reason why
first aid is in the curriculum, it's been for a while, but it was reinforced probably when I first came on as director, but it's been driven by smaller agencies that would rather just have an officer come to them, already trained, already have the certifications, and then ready to work. So we got to keep in mind that, you know, there is an urban and a rural component that we need to be cognizant of. But I dare say a lot of them are not keeping up on their certification. So we have found that it could be probably as a waste of money and resources to do that.
I said even to renew, you have to renew every 2 years, and then that would be an encumbered cost upon the department as well, unless they require the individual officer to pay and maintain that cert.
What's the average cost, do you know?
So it depends on group size and whatnot, but if you go to an in-person class, if we require it on the front end, I believe you're looking at anywhere between $40 to $60 is what I found. There were some online programs that looked like you could get online instruction for anywhere between $20 and $30. I haven't dug too deep into and made phone calls and checked group rates, but I know before when we were, I believe it was the National Safety Council, if I recall, they were requiring us to, even without issuing certifications, we were required to buy their book and issue their book in order to teach it. So that's not even certifying anybody. That's still having to purchase the book for every recruit that comes through.
And to renew is the same? Like it's another $40?
I don't know what the renewal is. Is it?
For every certification, it'll be the exact same.
So the renewal is the same as the certification itself?
Okay.
And like I said, they do get a form of self-care to treat if you're injured and out there on your own, or also if you have a fellow officer or a citizen that is injured. You know, you're talking sucking chest wound, tourniquet application, they're getting that in the equivalent to like a TCCC course or a LEAFR course.
Okay. What's the thought?
We do a certification at ours, and so we keep it going. Yeah, it's challenging.
Sheriff, you do it so they're certified, and then you do the renewal?
Yeah.
And does your department pay for it?
Yes. It's challenging. Okay. It's not easy. But.
Yeah, we do the same thing as once a year. We offer a CPR research and first aid, one class every year. We guys have to at least 10 every other year.
Okay. It just doesn't seem to me to be too much of a burden for somebody who's applying to the academy to provide that certification. Is $40 or $60. I mean, they have a large investment in coming out here anyway. That doesn't seem to add a whole lot to it.
Classes are being held all over the place.
Yes.
A little bit of the issue that I could see is we do, obviously every agency is on a different hiring schedule. Some agencies hire right up to when the post-class is going to start. And I know we have procedures in place to limit late entry and whatnot because applications are due 4 weeks prior to the academy. But we do have that occasion where a department needs to get somebody in, and we allow them a little ways into that four-week window of required application. So in certain circumstances, that may be difficult for the individual to obtain before making application. I don't know what the director's thought is or the council's thought is as making them provide that as a condition of graduation. I know
how
it's kind of
it?
a tracking nightmare kind of for us at post to not just get it on the front end. But
how long is the class? How long does it take?
It's a couple hour course on a Saturday, I believe.
Okay.
Like a 4 hour course or something like that.
If you do the CPR, it's 2 hours. If you have the first aid, it's another 2 hours.
So a total of 4 hours?
Yeah.
There are a lot of like fire stations and whatnot that have the courses routinely.
Colonel?
Sheriff, I think that we probably just need to make the decision whether we want part of basic certification or not. And
exactly.
Our agency, we do that type of training during our in-house training, so we could
meet whatever, fill whatever gaps need to be developed. But that gets, I think the director's right. It's more rural agencies that maybe don't have as much access to that that we need to consider. But I think we should either, if it's required or it's not required, as part of basic certification.
And that would require a vote because it is a change to the curriculum.
What are we doing though, Director, when it comes to the class? Is it getting cost prohibitive, or is it just like we can be more efficient if we didn't have to? Or what really is the?
So I didn't address one issue, and I apologize for that. A lot of the other issue is that there are so many options out there. There's the National Safety Council, there's the American Heart Association, and there's the Red Cross, and all of them differ in their own different ways. You know, one of them may require rescue breathing. The other one is just straight compressions. Therefore, we don't have a limitation, or do we feel that we can set a limitation being a state agency on saying, hey, we only accept the American Heart Association. So now we have to have tests for pretty much everything that's out there, because we do still test them, and the satellite academies are allowed to choose whichever entity they choose or whichever one they can find an instructor for. The other issue is it's tough to find instructors that want to come to the academy and teach first aid CPR.
So there's three
challenges we have. Cost is one. It's not a lot of money, but I think we could be spending it in a better place. And then the challenge of getting instructors, not just in first aid, just across the board, is becoming more difficult for our academy. Because we're competing against overtime, and then just officers just not getting involved in basic training.
And so, I guess the big thing is, too, is just so you guys are all aware, they aren't certified when they leave post. They get the training, but they're not certified in first aid and CPR.
Right.
But we still pay them money for that.
And so upon developing the curriculum, that's our problem, is we don't know which curriculum to develop. Are we going with American Heart? Are we going with Red Cross? Which one are we going with, and which one are we testing on? Because I know UHP may have one standard. Each agency is going to have their own different thing. And so for us, developing the curriculum and developing the test, it is very difficult for us. It's proving difficult for us.
So, Captain, are you looking for a motion from the council?
I would prefer. I don't want to push you guys in one way, one direction or the other, because obviously this is the body's decision. But the way I kind of see it, we have a couple options. One, remove it completely. Two, business as usual, and we try to figure it out. Or three, require it as a personal requirement on the cadet as a condition of graduation.
I think if we require it, we're having a hard enough time getting
people in the door as it is. It's right. Just another step that we may have to overcome, and it may reduce our pool even further. And I don't think that's not easy for us right now.
I'd make a motion that we keep it business as usual. And when I worked in extreme northern Utah, we put our officers in with the firemen and their CPR and first aid that they did every year. I think smaller towns, rural agencies can do that. And I know if my current agency, we offer it just like Duchesne does. Every other year they have to go to our first aid and our CPR class. So I think you just keep it as you're going right now, as you're doing. Teaching probably Stop the Bleed, I think. Some basic first aid that you need coming out of the academy?
Yeah, there. Like I said, there's some basic curriculum right now, but it depends on who the instructor is and what they are certified to teach. And like I said, that's proven to be difficult to, one, find somebody that's consistent, that's willing to come for that small block. You know, essentially they're only coming here about 6-7 times a year. And then two, if we can't get them consistent, finding a pool that's willing to share the burden.
Okay, so right now we have a motion from Chief Self to continue on with the program as it is, which is training without certification. Is that correct, Chief?
Correct.
Do I have a second?
Second from Sheriff Curtis. Any discussion on the motion?
I think it's the right thing to do. And here's where I put it. When a police officer shows up to a choking child, there's an expectation they're going to know what to do with that.
And I think our officers need to know that they know what to do with that as well. And I've actually got a really great example that was on the news last week of exactly that. Even though it's a, I know our training curriculum is getting complicated and more complex, getting thrown age issues thrown at us, but it's getting back to exactly what people expect when a police officer shows up.
Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor of Chief Soap's motion to continue on with the training as it's currently carried out without certification, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. It looks like we are to scheduling the
next meeting.
Next meeting.
Yes.
Which will probably be after the session in March.
When's the Chiefs conference?
The last week of March.
Last week, yeah.
25th,
I think that's right.
Do we want to do it in St. George, or do we want to do it here?
Is the public safety in March or May?
May.
Okay.
29th and 30th are 2 days for the Chiefs.
Oh, okay. So that's that week or
that 28th. Last, yeah, that last week.
And the round table is the 31st?
Yes.
So if this council was inclined to go to St. George, we'd do it the 31st, probably at 1300 after the round table. Or we could do it the week before, or even in April, here at Post.
Yeah, I'm good for a road trip out of the snow.
Okay, so 31st, 1300?
31st, 1300.
So March 31st, 2022 at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in St. George?
And location to be determined.
Okay. I think that's it. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I have a second.
Second.
Second from John Crowley. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.